Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 560, Science Faction, minimum number of humans, and a vaccine to save the world.
Minimum number of humans, that actually sounds like my ideal wedding invite list, like Lauren and I.
Yes.
Planning a wedding, you know, minimum number of humans. I think that's the theme we have going in.
Minimum number of humans, maximum number of goats.
I was going to say basset hounds, but you know what?
Yeah. The goat is the basset hound of the mountains.
That is often said. That is often said.
Yes. And speaking of the person who says that, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damon, how you doing over there in goat country?
Doing great. I would have thought, by the way, it would have been like the Shetland pony or something, but no.
Yeah, Shetland pony is too specific to, like, you know, this like one series of islands or whatever. Like, you know, it doesn't have the universal appeal of a good old goat, you know, just like good solid goat.
Just delicious goat, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's mainly a milk thing. Just love the milk.
And the cheese, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What is the purpose of a goat? Like, for example, now, if I have a farm, why do I have a goat on that farm? Do you just want something to hit you? Like, when you go feed the other more docile animals?
You can milk them, they eat a lot of stuff, and they have really good meat.
Okay.
I think the big, like, down here in Southern California, there's a bunch of goat farms where people essentially just use them as, like, living lawnmowers because they'll eat all the sage and stuff that we have around here. And so you just, like, release a bunch of goats and they clear everything out.
Yeah, okay, so fire. Clearing for fire.
Yes.
Safety. All right, you win this round, goat.
And it's actually kind of helpful, too, because goats are actually the cause of many wildfires.
Tom Brady? Is that what you're talking about? Tom Brady, LeBron James, they all get together and start like, hey, I'm an elite athlete. I'll start fucking wildfires wherever the fuck I want. I'll Johnny Cash this shit.
Like, few people realize that much like Southeast Asia, the goat community has also not yet given up cigarette smoking. And so it becomes an issue in terms of starting wildfires where they live.
Here's a goat, all done with a cigarette, just flicks it into the fucking brush. No, you're purposely ignoring Smokey. You speak his language.
All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number one. Interesting article in Live Science asked the question, what is the minimum number of people we would need to repopulate the world?
How much incest is acceptable?
That's actually part of the calculation, believe it or not. Like, you do have to do some, what we would call the taboo tabulations to figure out exactly how much would be allowed.
How easy is it to get stuck in this world that where all other humans are dead?
Now, I know this isn't our usual article type. We usually look at a new paper, looking at a discovery or something else like that. But this particular article, again, it's in Life Science. It's a free publication. You can go check it out. I was so interested in this because this is so up my alley in terms of like weird things to think about as you're falling asleep that I just had to bring this out as a discussion point. So let's say we had a COVID-like disease that spread across the world, but instead of having the death rate that COVID has, let's say it killed like 99.9% of all people, or some kind of nuclear war happened, or there was a gamma ray burst or a giant volcanic event or something like that. How many of us would have to survive in order to keep humanity going? Damon, you want to take a stab at it just right off the bat?
Well, I mean, they'd not only have to survive, they'd have to be localized within one place. You know, you can't have
that's
that last
part of the,
man.
That's part of the way you have to tabulate this.
Okay, so we're talking worldwide on the planet, or are we talking humans per square mile?
Yeah, well, that's actually one of the reasons that you get extra, like, it takes less people overall if you want to include Pitbull in the mix, because as Mr. Worldwide, his genetic reach is much further than the rest of ours.
If somebody just plays like a Latin rhythm, Mr. Yes. Worldwide will hear that. Like, it'll like a flare would have gone up somewhere on the globe.
If you go into a dark bathroom at night and say Bud Light into a mirror three times.
Bud Light Lime. Bud Light Lime. Bud Light Lime.
Mr. Worldwide!
Oh, man. Yeah, I just do it as a prank to, when my roommates are trying to sleep. I'll just summon Pitbull.
Man, this is a sausage fest.
I got to work in the morning. Good thing I'm bringing bitches.
So what do you think, David? What's our number? How many people do you think need to survive in order to repopulate the Earth in a sustainable fashion? So it can't just be for a single generation.
Okay, I know that we recently talked about how many T-Rexes existed at one point, and they were an apex predator. We would certainly be an apex predator.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to say about 2 million.
Okay, that was the T-Rex number at like given times. A very, very interesting way to think about it. I don't usually use T-Rex calculations when trying to figure out human population, but yeah, to each their own.
I am the T-Rex of local plumbing.
So this is actually a way more complicated question than you may think. There's a genetic question in terms of like how much genetic diversity do you need to have a sustaining population? But there's also other things, like for instance, Damien brought up inbreeding, right? So if you were to just say, how many people do we need right off the bat, and they're going to just kind of make their own society in their own way, that number is much larger than if you say, okay, we are controlling society, we only have this many breeding pairs, and each one of your kids will only have a select number of people they can then breed with because we don't want inbreeding down the lineages, and therefore, you know, yes, we can survive, but it's not going to be in a free society, at least for the first few generations until we gain some, you know, genetic diversity just through random mutation. It's not just going to be a free-for-all and everybody gets to pick their mate. You can only then, like, later generations can only mate with somebody that they can tell is not genetically related.
We've discussed on this show that all of the inhabitants of North and South America, the native inhabitants of North and South America, are from a breeding group of only, you said, 200 to 300 from Beringia.
Right, right. Aside, of course, from like the Eskimos, the Inuit, the Dorset people in the Arctic regions of North America. Yeah, all of them are from a single invasion from Beringia of, you know, 200 to 400 people.
So anecdotally, that's how many people I would need to reseed humanity.
Yeah, well, funny you bring that up. So technically, we'll get down to it, but if you do the math for something like spaceflight, like, so think of this in terms of if we were trying to colonize another world, right? In order to do that, we're going to have to send people on long voyages, many thousands of years to do one of these voyages, tens of thousands of years maybe, to get from one star system to another. And so the way you would do that is have an incredibly small crew that was either awake and breeding the whole time or in some kind of suspended animation and they woke up.
Can we film it? Can we live stream that? Just like fuck ship? Like the bang ship?
Yeah, well, one guy's like, well, I was breeding with the suspended animation people. I mean, they're never going to know. It's fine.
Do you realize how fucking lonely it is? This has to be one fucking bark. Violating your body in deep animation.
Yeah, and then they can't even really punish the guy too much because they're like, we technically need your genes still, so we can't kill you or anything. Like, damn it.
Listen.
No consequences.
You guys get to molest me extra hard when I go under cryosleep. Bam. Solved. Justice. I'm going to wake up with a Coke bottle in my ass. I did the math. I get it.
So for like those calculations, you could do it with as few as 98 people. So 49 breeding pairs of individuals who, now you have to do this. This is a space flight scenario. This isn't like a everybody gets wiped out scenario. So in this case,
or even an Everybody Loves Raymond scenario.
Yeah, which is a very different scenario.
That's an invasive parent constantly interfering with breeding.
But in that case, you have to choose people to start out with. Those 98 people are already chosen as genetically diverse stock. And so these aren't people who are closely related. Whereas if you were to think of like a disease or an event happening, chances are the remaining people are probably related to some extent. Like they were all in the same mind when the bomb blew up, or they all have the same genetic resistance to the disease that swept through, or they're just in the same area that was less affected by the whatever it is that killed everybody. There's a likelihood that they are more closely related than your two average people. So in this case, those 98 people, which seems to be the smallest number you can get to, has to be pretty genetically diverse. But like you said, we know the inhabitants of Beringia came and settled North America and South America, we think, with a group of 200 to 400 individuals who were by nature already pretty closely related because they were all Beringians who had been stuck genetically isolated for 10,000 years in Beringia. And therefore, you know, even with groups that aren't maybe so very far apart from one another, even a few hundred you could do this in. Now, it helps. Here's what helps in terms of the Beringia cases.
Lighting candles. Going down on people.
That does help.
Back in the day, that was a sacrifice. Like, you know, here it's kind of hot.
That's true.
But like back pre-hygiene,
that is
that was a chore.
Especially because you also didn't have floss to then later clean out your teeth.
Oh, can't I just castrate the lamb with my teeth? We got a bunch. I'm really behind on me work.
Now, in terms of the Beringia stuff, the thing that helped is people spread out pretty far, pretty fast. And so we know that they occupied the Pacific coasts of North and South America and then kind of spread inland and then stayed somewhat genetically isolated from one another. And what that meant is there was times for mutations to differentially develop among different subpopulations, which then fed into greater genetic diversity.
Xavier's Academy.
Well, as those populations then met and mingled throughout the eons, it fed into that time, that genetic diversity overall. So, you know, if that same 300 people had all just gone to one specific place and not left, they might not have been as successful because they wouldn't have the time to develop differential mutations that became part of the genetic diversity of the population. We know that for occupation of the Americas, occupation of remote Polynesian islands sometimes follows similar metrics, but those tend to have continuous breeding groups, meaning they went back and forth, you know, they brought new people in, et cetera, et cetera. And we've talked before about the human genetic bottleneck, which we believed happened about 70,000 years ago, where the entire population of the world got down to maybe a few thousand people, maybe even less than that. So we know that this has happened in the past and human beings have come out of it. It's one of the reasons we are, by the way, such a closely related species. But we also have to watch out because we have seen groups that essentially breed themselves into non-existence because of genetic malformations. We saw this with the Habsburg dynasty in Europe when they were basically the ruling party and they just like fucked sisters and cousins and whatnot until they just produced this morphologically weird last descendant who couldn't have a kid and was like fucked up and had a weird face and basically the end of the line.
The Brazzers dynasty is going to suffer a similar fate unless we do something.
There are isolated groups that do inbreeding that then have a lot of problems like later on. One of my favorite examples is like the settlers of Utah, the Mormon settlers of Utah. There wasn't a lot of, they didn't want to bang Indians because in their religion at that time, Indians were basically not humans. So like there wasn't a lot of people out in Utah at that time, so they could really only bang the other Mormons. And they were so inbred that there are actually entire diseases we didn't even know existed. Like they didn't exist on Earth as far as we knew until the Mormons banged so many sisters that they came into existence. Like you'll see a famous picture of these two twins with some weird genetic condition where they have giant ears and
caffeine allergies.
Yeah.
An aversion to sunlight where they have to wear ridiculous underwear in order to protect them from UV radiation. Also sin.
It's all functional.
The ability to, while being lame in so many ways, like on paper, still are really wholesome people who mean well and are, you know,
right,
productive members of society. Listen, I want to shit on Mormons. Horrible past and everything. But if we had to compare like what your average Catholic is today versus what your average Mormon is, you're like, your average Mormon, generally not a toxic person. And
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, like, hey, you believe whatever nutty shit you want.
It's a weird prairie dress, but as long as you keep it over on your side of the Utah border, we're okay with it. Now, obviously, in those situations with small groups, not only do you have to avoid inbreeding and you have to look at like descendants down the line to make sure everybody's doing that, but you also kind of have, that's like a form of eugenics. You also have to have full cooperation of everybody involved, low death rates, a coordinated group system. And even that might not be enough. I mean, just like one bad disease or something rips through your group of people and you're fucked. So it is kind of an interesting question. There isn't really necessarily one minimum number because there are so many outside factors that could come in. I mean, think about this. If this was like not the spaceflight situation, but something where a bunch of people died from a nuclear bomb or I guess a series of nuclear bombs or a bunch of volcanic activity or something like that, I think it would be a lot more like The Walking Dead than it would be like a cooperating effort to help save humanity. And if anything, I think I used to think The Walking Dead was like particularly pessimistic. And I think COVID has shown us that it's actually probably an understatement as to how bad things would get.
Yeah, I mean, really, like, once the inconveniences became actual inconveniences.
Yeah, I mean, there's no guarantee people would work together instead of kill each other. So, like, you would need more people to start your initial colony because so many people would probably get, like, a fucking Phillips head screwdriver to the base of the skull from some random person in the woods.
I think, you know, we could also finally have an excuse to be, like, you know, I feel like, you know, during COVID, there was a lot of people who were, like, sane, but, like, well, we can't murder the people, all the coworkers and stuff that we just found out right. Were crazy. You know, I guess we're not there yet. I mean, they were much closer to murdering us than we are to murdering them. But I feel like in this situation where they're genuinely a threat, I think there just has to be some science-minded people who just like say, hey, we got to put down these dogs. in order to move forward. But then think of the utopia we will have.
Now, Damien brought up a good point earlier when he was talking about the fact that, you know, if we're talking about a worldwide disaster, these survivors have to either be grouped in the same place or they have to be able to find each other. And so, you know, assuming you have something that kills a mass amount of people. So first, let's talk numbers. There's 7.674 billion people on Earth right now. If you started thinking about what we would need to create a breeding distribution, you would need a few thousand because you would need to be able to get everybody in the same place. Presumably, some of the people who survive won't be fertile or a breeding age, or maybe they'll have a medical condition where they couldn't do it. And then on top of that, there's going to be issues in terms of getting the right people in the right place at the right time, death of those young kids because there aren't doctors around to birth these kids and stuff like that. So you're going to need at least a few thousand. I think you'd need at least over 10,000 because you also have to go find those people. So now what happens? So let's say something, a big volcanic thing happens. Somehow a couple thousand people survive across the face of the earth. How are you going to find them, right? Like, the person who's running the TV stations is down. The servers that power the internet are all going to go out because there's no power to them. So, like, how are you going to go out and find all of the people who survived this thing? Like, unless you're a pilot and you're really good with a Cessna and you know where to go get fuel for that Cessna and where to fly and then land someplace else where you can also fuel up that Cessna and then fly around looking for campfires or something, like, it's going to be really difficult just to get all of those people in one spot. And then even if you do, it's like, are you just going to fly around and then gather people three at a time? And how are you going to cross the ocean? Like, it's just, it would be a big thing. So, I mean, presumably you would need something that allowed at least a few tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of individuals to survive. So if you're there, then that would mean we have to have something around 99. It could only kill about 99.999% of people. One more nine on the end of that would kind of take us to a point that is probably too low. We'd only have about 7,000 people left on Earth to have anyone survive. So that's about what I would imagine the death rate could be and humanity still survive. Again, this all changes if the people who are surviving are a bunch of people in like a CDC bunker with a bunch of genetic equipment and the ability to restart civilization. You know, they could do it with less. But if it's if it's me and Damien, and let's say me and Damien were recording a science faction in some kind of new studio we had that doubled as like a bomb shelter bunker, and then we came out and everybody was gone and we had to go around and try and find everyone, I think we're going to need like 20, 30,000 people minimum.
So how do we go about finding these people? Do we do it Walking Dead style? Do we just play, go to major population centers, play music really loudly, and then just ambush everybody who comes? Like, what?
Yeah, I would definitely set up a lot of nets. The thing where you're walking through the forest and you get picked up in that net ball. I've always wanted to pull one of those off.
I forget. This would be the perfect world for you to really explore your love of traps.
Oh my God, it would be fantastic.
Society
I would get
is holding
so many.
You back.
I would get so many people. And I wouldn't be mean to them. I'd let them go eventually. But like, I don't know, I might have a brand like "You've Been Trapped by Bobby" or something, you know, I just stamp that on real quick.
Yeah, there's like a group of raiders. You just want to tag them just so you know where to find them.
Yeah, I treat it like a biologist. I have a little thing I clip into their ear and then I let them go.
Hey, you're scared, big guy. Go. On your cage, big guy. He's scared.
Majestic.
No, you've broken him. He's a gimp now. He's just fighting. Well, yeah, am I going to not fuck this guy? Come on, like, I'm a biologist. I'm an archaeologist. Of course I'm going to do weird, creepy sex things.
Now, it is interesting when you consider, like, the space flight scenario of us sending people out to go colonize other planets. Because, again, tens of thousands of years, they're going to be sitting in these spaceships, likely in some kind of suspended animation or something, on their trip to go out and colonize these planets. And so, if we send them out there, not only do we have to think of the number, but think of the distribution, right? Like, you couldn't just send super elite people. Like, this couldn't just be, like, you need some physicians, you're going to need a lot of different stuff like that. But you're also just going to need, like, blue-collar construction workers to build shit once you get there. Like, you're going to need people that do fairly base-level jobs to be able to go do this. So when you think of, like, the genetic components, if you're thinking about, like, colonizing planets, you also have to think of, like, the vocational abilities of those people that you're sending out. And that's kind of a very interesting mixture.
You mean just have people who have the upper body strength and ability to learn? Like, listen, if high school dropouts could do construction, I think other people can as well.
No, you would have to send like skilled professionals, like there's no one to teach them once they're there. So they have to go having already learned how to do this skill.
So there'd be like generations of people just passing on theoretical, like, yeah, I'm a great wood carver. You know, I'm great at wood carving. concrete. I'm a great concrete for drywall guy.
No, it's not like a caste system that gets handed down on the spaceship. I'm more imagining that everybody gets put in suspended animation. They learn their shit on Earth, suspended animation, then you go to the other planet.
Question. I think this is almost like a separate science faction episode. How would suspended animation be done? Could it be done?
Oh, how? I assume so. It's in a lot of movies, so.
Well, in that case, Bobby was blown away to find out that The Avengers was actually nothing, a work of fiction.
Keep talking. I'll snap your ass out of existence.
I'm sorry, sir. I just don't want to take the chance. Maybe he can. That's just not worth
it. On to article number 2, a vaccine may save the world, and it has nothing to do with COVID.
Is this the HPV vaccine?
No. We've had that one for a bit. This is actually a more recent one.
But it's...
I actually got that one, which, by the way, they were incredibly hesitant. They actually told me they weren't going to give it to me because I was not a woman. And I was like, hey, man, Michael Douglas, there is a chance I might find myself in a position where I, too, could go down on Catherine Zeta-Jones. And I don't want to get throat cancer from it. I gave a whole speech to my physician who finally just gave up and gave me the shot.
Yeah, and just because you kept offering to get throat cancer from them. I don't know if you know, I'm willing to show you what I bring to the table. Huh? A little bit of, we call this Medicare Plus insurance. Wink.
Once, yeah, he could not deny that to the world afterwards. Yeah, so this story is actually about a malaria vaccine made by the same Oxford team that made the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine. So remember malaria? We've talked about it a bunch on this show. It's one of the weird ones because it's not caused by a virus. It's not caused by a bacteria. It's not even caused by a fungus. It's caused by a protist, essentially just a small animal in a way that gets transported around in the inside of a mosquito, and people get it. And it is probably the biggest killer of human beings throughout history. It has probably killed more people than anything else.
After backyard wrestling. After mountain bike accidents.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Dirt bike accidents.
It's kind of crazy when you think of, like, war and, like, famine and all of that stuff, and it's like malaria has killed more people, but it really is truly a horrible disease that has killed a tremendous amount of people. I mean, even this past year, during the pandemic, malaria killed more people in Africa than COVID did. So, like, even in the height of a pandemic, it is still just chugging away, killing people. It kills on average about 400,000 people a year, and most of them are children. So unlike COVID, where, you know, some people might have been able to live a good life and then die later on, a lot of times this kills the very, very young. The other thing about malaria that really sucks is you get it, then let's say you don't die and you beat it, it will come back. It is basically you have it for the rest of your life. It will just keep coming back. Every time you get super, super sick, it's almost like HIV. It'll, you know, pop back up again and come back out of your system. And so usually if you have malaria, if you live long enough, you will die from that malaria eventually.
What if I approach it like this? Now, obviously I've only had malaria a few times just to get out of work.
Yes.
Bar mitzvahs, et cetera. But getting out of my own bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
And bris. What if I approach it with the attitude like, I'm not trapped in here with you, malaria. You're trapped in here with me. You think you're going to make my life hell? I'm coming after you. That's when I start a regiment. Like, you know, like if it acts up one day, I retreat. I'll lick toilet seats until I get a really high fever just to make life uncomfortable for the protozoa.
You're fighting the malaria by making yourself so sick that you cause a fever. That's kind of like your technique of, like, you get into a fight with your wife and so you just soil yourself and climb into bed and you're like, you have to live with this as well now.
Wow, Bobby. I never would have dreamed that. And I'm petty as fuck. You know, like, and then, like, taking amphetamines to power through the sickness just so, like, I don't get around this.
So, like, it's been really hard. People have been trying to create a malaria vaccine since 1910. That was when the first malaria vaccine came out.
I think my method gets the malaria out. Like, just like, it's kind of like when you light a tick's ass on fire, it'll remove itself. I'm doing is just do a lot of hard living.
Also, ticks are losers, too. So if you're like, hey, I heard somebody's got free weed, it'll just, like, pop his head out and be like, where?
That's way better than lighting my arm on fire.
Oh, my. But it's hard to create a vaccine against malaria because, again, it's a protist. This is much more complicated than a virus or a bacteria. It's got thousands of genes. The parasite has a complex life cycle that changes, so you can only attack it during certain parts of its life cycle with the same thing. That same tool won't work at other parts of that protist life cycle. And it has shifting surface proteins. So unlike the ACE2 spike protein that we target for COVID, this thing will have different surface proteins based on the individual strain of malaria, based on what part of its life cycle it's in, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a very hard target to hit.
Fighting malaria is not unlike fighting King Hippo in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. You have to wait for malaria to raise its arm. Then you just start hammering the midsection.
Yeah, or that time you and I fought a hippo.
He might have been royalty. I was...
To be fair to the hippo, he was sleeping, and we are no longer allowed in the zoo.
Hello, please leave the zoo. It is I, Horace, the talking hippo, elected alderman to the city of Cleveland. Let's get him! Please stop pummeling me. I don't care how much you educate the public with science and dick jokes.
So the WHO set their parameters at 75% effectiveness, and nobody has even come close. The most effective of the almost 150 vaccines that have been developed to try and fight against malaria, the most effective have been 55% effective, and that cuts way down over the years. So you get the shot, and then it gets less and less effective till it's down below 30% after only a few years. Well, the new one that we were talking about that was released by the Oxford AstraZeneca team came in at 77% effective, going over that 75% mark. And so it looks like this will be the first mass distributed malaria vaccine. They already have 200 doses of this ready to go that they will essentially ship out the second it gets approved. And this will be a big deal. Again, 400,000 people a year, that's a big deal. I mean, it's not necessarily COVID numbers worldwide, but that's just because malaria only affects tropical type areas. And if it did, it would be even more so. And it's a truly horrible disease. Again, killed more people probably than anything else on Earth ever. More war, more famine, more than other disease, et cetera, et cetera. Some people even say more than all of that stuff combined. It is making the lives miserable of people, even those who survive it. It's a truly horrible disease to have. It is one they'll be with them for the rest of their life, and they'll continue to get it. I have a few friends who got it while working in the Peace Corps, and they will still have kind of the bouts of malaria when they get really, really sick. And it's a truly, truly horrible disease to have. So hearing that this is coming around is amazing news. Not only will this, you know, obviously impact all these people who have malaria and who would otherwise get malaria and whose kids would get malaria and all these things like that. But think about this. If we eradicate malaria, we then open up a bunch of avenues for totally unrelated diseases to be solved. Because right now, if you're the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, you are using a significant amount of your money to go to things like mosquito nets to stop malaria, because malaria is such a devastating illness. That's great. That's the dollar for dollar, probably one of the best things you can do to try and keep people alive and help humanity in general. But if you suddenly free up all that money because malaria is no longer a big issue and you don't have to spend all that money on mosquito nets, now think of what you can do. Now you can start looking into cancers. You can start looking into other diseases. Things that have nothing to do with malaria will end up being fixed or solved or helped.
Erectile dysfunction.
That was one of the big ones. I mean,
not enough resources are being spent on that.
Not enough people in Africa. That's what they always say. So think of all the stuff we could do if we got rid of malaria. And that's not even including the fact that there's issues with current anti-malarial drugs. There's a great This American Life story about a guy, like some of them cause these weird psychotic breaks in certain people, and we don't know why, like specific malaria drugs do. There's a guy who, like, he was taking his malaria drugs as regularly in India, and he forgot who he was for like 2.5 years. Like he had complete amnesia and had no idea who he was. And like that kind of stuff regularly happens. So there's another just thing you could check off the list.
Okay. Did his wife just walk in like on his, like on a mistress or something? Like, I need to know some background to this. I need to know how committed this guy.
Oh, he went all shaggy. He's like, it wasn't me because I don't know who I am.
If you're telling me, like, for example, like Bobby, if you all of a sudden like had to, for some reason, like you were backed into a corner, like in a sitcom, and your only goal, like thing that you had in your mind was to say, where am I? I have amnesia. What is happening? I would believe you. You would have the strength of character to bust this out for 2 years to worry your wife and child.
Yeah.
Because
do a lot of like reading on the side to look up all the symptoms of this particular type of amnesia, make sure I exhibit them properly.
Yeah, you would prey on human sympathy and kindness until they believed you.
Yeah, I mean, sounds like a good way to go. All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 560, where you learned all about the minimum number of people we would need to repopulate the world and a vaccine that may save that world, even though it's not a COVID one. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 561.
Hey, I don't know if you can hear me out there, but if you're any survivors in this war-torn world, find your way to Florida. There, you'll find food, shelter, and Mr. Worldwide!
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.